There are clusters of stars in our galaxy which are extremely ancient. This is the best example, one of the best. This is 47 Tucanae. It's a globular cluster. And as opposed to the earlier clusters of stars I showed you, this is several billion years old. In fact, it's probably as old as the universe itself, and it was formed probably before the Milky Way became the spiral galaxy that we know now. There's a million or more stars here. We're only seeing the brightest in this colour photograph, and it's their self-gravity which keeps this object as a unit. Smaller clusters with fewer stars eventually get disrupted by the gravity of our galaxy because they're trapped inside it, and they sort of evaporate away after a relatively short time. These massive globular clusters hang around literally for the age of the universe. But even these stars will eventually die. Well, these stars are old and they have relatively low mass, which is why they've survived so long. But eventually when they die, they'll produce objects that look like this. This is a so-called planetary nebula. It has nothing to do with planets at all. But when the first were seen through a telescope, people thought that this ring of stuff was places where planets were condensing around a star. That's not the case. But what's happened here is that this star, or the remnant of it, has undergone a major internal collapse. Because it's run out of fuel, it's devoured all the hydrogen in its interior and made it into helium. Nuclear fusion is what keeps the stars and the sun shining. But eventually that process goes awry because the fuel's not available in the core of the star. So there's a major internal rearrangement, a kind of gigantic cosmic burp, if you like, and the star throws off its outer layer, which is this. It blasts it off at a modest velocity, at least modest by astronomical standards. This is expanding at about 40 kilometres per second. And this represents the outer surface of the star. Well, if you put a spectrograph on here and analyse the light, split it up into its individual colours, we find that this green is due to oxygen, there's red here due to nitrogen, and other lines which tell of the presence of calcium and potassium and lightweight elements of that kind, sulphur, for example. Magnesium, all of them present in the outer surface of this star, and none of them present, at least not present in those concentrations, when that star formed several thousand million years ago. So what happens in stars, less in stars like this than the more massive ones, is that elements are created from hydrogen and helium, the original stuff of the universe. We find that we find ourselves, for example, we're made of carbon. Well, I am, I don't know about you. With a bit of hydrogen and oxygen and one or two other minor ingredients, but that's what I'm made of. And that stuff wasn't here when the universe began. This room is made of, God knows what, made of silicon, I think. And that wasn't here either when the universe began. And there's aluminium and steel and all that stuff. None of that was here when the universe started. Those elements have been formed by stars, and often when stars die. When stars die, they produce lovely objects like this, planetary nebulae, which we can study. In fact, this is one of the very few times where we can actually look inside a star. This star's thrown off its outer layer. We get to look at the nuclear reactor in the middle. This is a so-called, or will be soon, a white dwarf star. And at that point, they're extremely hot, extremely tiny, and extremely luminous. Well, this is a lovely symmetrical object, it catches the eye. Planetary nebulae often are. Here is another one. This object is also a planetary nebula. If you were to look at it in that direction, it would appear to be an annulus like the picture you saw previously. But there is hidden structure in here, and once again, infrared imagery could come to the rescue to show you details of the inside of that planetary nebula. Again, at first look, this picture doesn't seem to be at all interesting and exciting. But there are structures in here which tell of the morphology and interactions of this stuff within the planetary nebula that you can't see at all at visible wavelengths. And again, an image like this is due to the genius of David Allen producing the instrument which was able to make it. Well, not all stars die as planetary nebulae. By far, the more dramatic explosion comes from the very massive stars, the stars that are 10 or 20 times more massive than the Sun. These objects are intrinsically very luminous, perhaps a million times more luminous than the Sun. They use their nuclear fuel extremely quickly because the pressure and temperature in the interior is unimaginably high. But eventually they too run out of fuel, and when they do, they collapse in on themselves with astonishing and dramatic force, and the star is blown asunder. And this stuff is flying away from the star with velocities of thousands of kilometres per second. 10,000 kilometres per second is a typical number for the early stages of a supernova, because that's what we're witnessing here. Not quite, however. This star was a supernova just over 1,000 years ago. In fact, it was noted by Chinese astronomers in the year 1054. They called it a guest star, a star that suddenly appeared from nowhere and gradually faded away. When we look at this place now, we find that these tendrils are the remnants of a star that exploded just 1,000 years ago. This is the famous Crab Nebula. This object can be seen from Australia, from the southern hemisphere, but this picture wasn't made by the Anglo-Australian telescope. It was made from plates taken with the 200-inch telescope on Mount Palomar, plates that were sent to me a couple of years ago. Well, if we stand and watch this object for 12,000 years or thereabouts, it's going to change, because the velocities involved here are very substantial and the amounts of energy involved are huge. So if we watch this object in 12,000 years or so, we might see something that looks like this. The nebula has expanded in all directions, and that nebula is energetic, it's travelling quickly, and it bumps into the tenuous gas and dust sort of lingering around between the stars. There isn't much there, but what there is gets excited by this shock wave travelling through it, and it's quite a vigorous mechanical shock that bangs into the quiescent, cold stuff between the stars, and it shocks it into excitement. It really warms it up, lights it up. And these wispy nebulae are evidence of that, because this is a quarter of an expanding shock wave. It's all crinkly and bumpy because the stuff between the stars is crinkly and bumpy, but in fact this is a quarter of an annulus. Down here somewhere, you can't see it off the picture, is the remnant of the star, which is in fact a pulsar, because this is the Vela supernova remnant, the end point of a star that exploded here about 12,000 years ago. Well, the energy from this exploding star is wonderful. It does all sorts of magical things inside the galaxy. It also produces rather spectacular pictures. If we look more closely at this bit here, we can see the kind of detail that one gets from images of this kind. We're learning here about the structure of the stuff between the stars. This blue bit is the shock front, and all this other stuff is lit up by the energy from the star that exploded all that long time ago. But this energy actually does a very interesting thing in our galaxy. It compresses, it squeezes the gas and dust between the stars, and it triggers new star formation. And when supernovae occur on a galaxy scale, the scale of a Milky Way, then their energy is sufficient to drive some of the dynamic processes inside a galaxy like our own, for example.